This is KGNU's Morning Magazine for Wednesday, June 28th of 2023. I'm your host, Shannon Young. It's Bike to Work Day, and if you're on two wheels and looking for breakfast, you're welcome to swing by the station at 4700 Walnut Street in Boulder. We have a breakfast station out front and a great crowd outside. Coming up on today's program, speaking of bikes, we have the author of the new book, The Deadhead Cyclist, here in the studio ahead of his book launch tomorrow. Chris Moore will have his weekly commentary, Make Them Hear You. And then herbalist Brigitte Mars will share her regular Wednesday feature, Naturally. A BBC News update and commentary from Jim Hightower are at the bottom of the hour. Then on a public affair, with all the rain and hail coming on the heels of a hard winter, your garden may be having a tough time. We'll have a panel of expert gardeners in the studio this morning to talk about current conditions and answer your questions. We'll be taking questions by phone and email, so if you'd like to get your question in early, send it to dj@kgnu.org. Then at 9:30, Cameron Henderson will be in the Boulder studio for the Morning Sound Alternative. That's all still coming up, but first a look at the headlines with KGNU's Kira Zizzo.
The Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment is partnering with the Montezuma County Public Health Department to investigate and monitor cases of plague in southwest Colorado. One human case of plague has been identified in an adult in Montezuma County, with the exposure likely occurring on private property. The primary transmission methods are flea bites and contact with infected animals. During summer, when human-animal interaction increases, the risk of animal-borne diseases rises. To minimize plague exposure, avoid fleas, protect pets with flea treatments, steer clear of areas with wild rodents, refrain from touching or feeding them, avoid contact with sick or dead animals, and seek veterinary care for pets showing plague symptoms. Plague symptoms resemble the flu, including fever, headache, weakness, muscle aches, and swollen lymph nodes. Seek immediate medical attention for flu-like symptoms or potential exposure to rodents or fleas. Several Colorado environmental justice organizations penned a letter to the Air Quality Control Commission this week, requesting stronger rules to protect Colorado citizens from pollution. Ryan Bigham has more.
The Air Quality Control Commission recently released the Greenhouse Gas, Energy and Emissions Management for Manufacturing Phase 2, or GEM 2 rules, which these groups allege does not have strong enough protections. Environmental organizations like 350 Colorado and Green Latinos have cited Colorado's Environmental Justice Act, which allows the state to modify proposed action to better respond to the public's concerns about environmental impacts. Colorado lawmakers passed the Environmental Justice Act to better help Colorado's marginalized communities, who are often disproportionately affected by pollution. The environmental justice organizations are asking for the GEM 2 rules to include a mandatory reductions in greenhouse gas emissions from industries and manufacturing, as well as the possibility of trade embargoes with repeat violators. These organizations say these changes to the rules will help Colorado easier reach climate goals and protect vulnerable communities from the effects of pollution. For KGNU, I'm Ryan Bigham.
Boulder officials are warning residents to stay away from bodies of water containing algae blooms due to potential toxins. Algae blooms, which thrive in warm weather and slow-moving water, can include cyanobacteria, also known as blue-green algae, which produce harmful toxins. The city does not conduct cyanobacteria testing due to the variable nature of the toxin production, so caution is advised around any algae blooms. Cyanobacteria blooms may appear as thick pea soup or bluish-green paint, while long, stringy, bright green or mustard-yellow strands are typically harmless. Residents are reminded to follow posted regulations and be cautious around water with algae blooms, including areas where dogs are allowed to enter. A new trail is coming to North Boulder. Poor Jai Junket has more.
The City of Boulder's Open Space and Mountain Parks Department has started construction on the North Sky Trail. This is a new 3.5-mile trail located north of Boulder and west of U.S. Highway 36. The North Sky Trail is part of the department's efforts to fulfill past trail planning processes and its master plan, with trail maintenance being a priority. The trail will provide a connection between OSMP's Foothills North Trail and the Jodor Ranch Trail, offering opportunities for hiking, biking, and horseback riding from Boulder to Left Hand Canyon. The city plans to complete the trail in early 2024. For KGNU, I'm Poor Jai Jongkit.
On Friday, University of Colorado Boulder professor Paul Campos filed a discrimination and retaliation lawsuit against the university and a law school dean. Campos alleges unequal pay based on his Latino ethnicity and punishment for taking paternity leave. He claims to have faced retaliation after reporting the discrimination. The lawsuit also references a salary study conducted by the university, indicating Campos received significantly less than his peers. Campos also received a low annual performance rating, which Campos alleges came in retaliation to his decision to take paternity leave. According to the Daily Camera, Campos has worked at CU Boulder for 32 years. Today is Bike to Work Day, when thousands of cyclists across the Denver-Boulder region hit the streets, trails, and bike paths. This annual event encourages commuters to choose biking, public transit, or alternative transportation methods instead of driving. This initiative seeks to promote health, improve air quality, reduce traffic congestion, and offer a fun experience. Nearly 300 stations along the metro's area commute routes will provide snacks and merch to riders. In Boulder, KGNU is hosting a breakfast station for cyclists. For today's weather, in Denver, it's mostly sunny with a high near 90. Tonight, partly cloudy and a low around 60. In Boulder, we can expect a high of 81. And tonight, a slight chance of thunderstorms and a low of 57. In Fort Collins, it'll be mostly sunny with a high of 87. Wind gusts are expected as high as 22 miles per hour. For KGNU, I'm Kira Zizzo.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. I'm your host, Shannon Young. What do the Grateful Dead have to do with long-distance cycling and staying healthy and active into your 60s? Well, I have a guest in the studio to answer that question. Stu Salo is the author of the new book, The Deadhead Cyclist, Life Lessons on Two Wheels to the Tunes of the Grateful Dead. He joins me in the studio this morning. Good morning, Stu.
Good morning, Shannon. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you for riding in on your bike during Bike to Work Day, Mr. Deadhead Cyclist.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, so what do the Grateful Dead have to do with biking? At least for you?
Really not that much. The book is really a book about passion, and two of my greatest passions in my life are the Grateful Dead and cycling. And I think that when we live life out of our passions, whatever they are, they don't have to be the Grateful Dead or cycling. Another passion of mine is baseball. You don't have to have those exact passions, but when you do live your life within your passions, you develop a set of life principles to live by. And those set of life principles is really what the book is all about. There are 52 life lessons that I gleaned on two wheels while listening to the Grateful Dead. And that's really the gist of the book in broad strokes.
Well, and you grabbed some lyrics and built around them with your meditations on two wheels. Mm-hmm. But also the book contains quite a bit of history about the actual shows that you were listening to in your rides. How did that come about, and why go into that rock and roll history?
Yeah. Well, you know, having been to so many Grateful Dead concerts myself, they all fit into different categories. The Grateful Dead were, I guess I'll say, famous and infamous for you know, having good nights and bad nights. And I think that one of my goals in putting this book together was to pick out 52 of the best Grateful Dead concerts out of the 2,600 that they performed over the course of 30 years and present them in a virtual trip around the sun starting in January and ending in December. And so I came up with this concept called This Week in Grateful Dead History. And each of the 52 chapters of the book has a This Week in Grateful Dead History concert pick that from which I extract a song that was performed at that concert and a lyric that was part of that song. And then I riff off of that lyric with the life lesson that there is to be learned from it.
And since you're combining two fairly separate categories, Deadhead and Cyclist, have you found that your writings, because they came out first kind of as a blog, do they find more traction among cyclists or deadheads?
Far more among deadheads. I actually had some difficulty engaging and continue to have some difficulty engaging the cycling community, although I am going to, I know you're going to mention my book signing event tomorrow night at Boulder Bookstore. I have another book signing event next month at Full Cycle Bikes in Boulder. And I do hope to engage the cycling community more because there's really something beautiful about cycling where you're out in nature and, you know, your mind begins to wander. And I mean, I think this is kind of, you know, how I came up with a lot of these concepts is, you know, when you put yourself in the right kind of environment, when you're actively engaged in a passion like cycling and you're in the wilderness somewhere, that's where these ideas come to you. In fact, that's where the whole concept of Deadhead Cyclist came to me one day. I'll talk about that if you want to ask that particular question.
Well, first I want to ask you to give a bit more information about the event that's going to be happening tomorrow at the Boulder Bookstore. And not only that, but there's also Dead & Co. this weekend. So
it's a big weekend for Deadheads.
Yeah, and maybe Deadheads on bikes too. I don't know. I mean, so tell us about what's happening at the Boulder Bookstore tomorrow and later on this weekend.
Okay. Well, for listeners who have been to book signing events at the Boulder Bookstore, you know that they have a space upstairs. And, you know, I'm going to give a brief talk, probably some of the same information that we're going over now, but I have some more biographical information that I want to get to that, you know, we probably won't have time for this morning. And then, you know, then I'll be signing books for those who want to purchase a copy. It's a standard Boulder Bookstore book signing event, nothing too unique except for the Deadhead Cyclist concept, which I think is, you know, I've called it, with all due humility, the most unique approach to the Grateful Dead yet, which is not meant to be taken literally, of course, but it's a marketing term, and there is truth in it also.
Well, are you planning to do anything during the Dead & Co. events as well?
Right. Well, to start with, I'm going to go to the shows. And there are some events connected to this Dead & Company weekend that where I'm going to be available selling books and talking to folks about the book. The first one is the Boulder Market, which is also called Shakedown Street. There is a Shakedown Street event at virtually every Grateful Dead concert. And by the way, this is not the Grateful Dead that's playing this weekend, but it is a Grateful Dead concert with material from the Grateful Dead. And if you don't have tickets yet, you can still get them, I think, for the second and third shows is what I've been informed. But there's an event during the day on Saturday and Sunday from 9 to 4 at the Boulder High School field. Adjacent to or near, I've been told, near the farmer's market on Saturday, where all kinds of stuff will be available. It'll be quite a circus, actually. I'll be there talking about the book and talking to folks and selling books. And then after the Dead & Company shows, there are after-party concerts at the Boulder Theater and the Fox Theater, and we'll be at the Boulder Theater afterwards with a deadhead cyclist table as well. So there'll be plenty of opportunities to engage.
Well, and you were alluding to a biographical anecdote earlier in this interview, but I actually want to ask you about one thing in particular. In this book, there are only about a handful of photos, but one of the photos is in front of KGNU. What's right. up with that?
You know, I honestly can't remember how that's relevant to the book, but I do want to talk about this being my third appearance on KGNU. And there's some really interesting symmetry there, because the first appearance was on August 19th, 1993, the day the first edition of Boulder Weekly was published. I don't think you mentioned this yet.
Yeah,
but
listeners, he's also... Yeah, tell him about your connection to the Boulder Weekly.
In my spare time, I'm the founder and owner and publisher of Boulder Weekly. And Leland Rucker and Jennifer Kaufman, our founding editor and art director, and I were on KGNU in 1993 on a program that they used to call Live from Penny Lane, which was from the Penny Lane Coffee House. And, you know, we were asked a bunch of very interesting questions about, you know, could an alternative weekly like Boulder Weekly survive? Mm. Okay. And then the photo you're referring to 15 years later was a photo of my daughter Julia and I on the 15th anniversary of Boulder Weekly. We came by to gloat that we had survived 15 years after answering those interesting questions about whether we could survive or not. And then and now another 15 years have gone by, and Boulder Weekly is about to celebrate its 30th anniversary. And so that's what that picture was from, the 15th anniversary of Boulder Weekly, when we were at KGNU the last time. 15 years have gone by fast, Shannon.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, you're still right here in Worcester Hill, and I guess welcome back should have been what I said.
Yeah.
In our final minute, why don't you let folks know how they can find a copy of your book or find out more should they want to know
sure.
further information?
Okay. Well, the most immediate way of doing it is to come to the book signing event tomorrow night at the Boulder Bookstore at 6:30 p.m. I'd love to see you there. And then you can go to my website, deadheadcyclist.com, where you can read sample chapters from the book. You can also purchase a copy there. And then, you know, there'll be some these other events that I mentioned at the Boulder Market on Saturday and Sunday, the Boulder Theater, the after party shows on Saturday and Sunday nights. I'll also be having a book signing event next month on July 25th at Full Cycle Bikes. And if all else fails, look me up on the internet and send me an email at deadheadcyclist.com, and I'll make sure you get a copy of the book.
My guest today has been Stu Sallow, author of The Deadhead Cyclist, Life Lessons on Two Wheels to the Tunes of the Grateful Dead. Thanks for cruising through on your bike this morning.
Very much my pleasure, Shannon. Thank you again for having me.
We go now to Chris Moore's weekly commentary, Make Them Hear You.
Make them hear you.
This is Make Them Hear You with ideas on how you can have your voice heard before Congress. When the Citizens United case came before the U.S. Supreme Court over a decade ago, the courts determined that corporations are effectively persons when it comes to constitutional rights of free speech. Since then, huge amounts of dark money, whose sources can remain a secret, are pouring into political campaigns. In fact, Democrats actually outpaced Republicans in raising dark money from undisclosed donors in 2020, according to the New York Times. 15 of the most politically generous nonprofit organizations that usually support the Democratic Party spent more than $1.5 billion in 2020, while 15 similar groups that usually side with the GOP gave about $900 million. Nonprofits are permitted to funnel money into partisan politics, but that is not supposed to be their primary activity. Charities are not allowed to take part in partisan efforts, but some have defied the rules to utilize the tax code so they can participate in politics through avenues that are technically not political. Getting corporate money out of politics is the goal of U.S. Representative Pramila Jayapal, who is introducing an amendment to the Constitution that would end corporate personhood, reverse Citizens United, put power back into the hands of people, and make it clear that money does not equal speech. The We the People Amendment, H.J.R. 48, specifies that the rights provided by the Constitution are for people, not corporations, and that artificial entities have no constitutional rights. The amendment also works to get big money out of politics after the most expensive campaign in American history. Additionally, the joint resolution mandates that federal, state, and local governments require that all political contributions and expenditures be publicly disclosed. Quote, corporations are not people and money is not speech, close quote, according to Congresswoman Jayapal. Quote, in every election cycle since the disastrous Citizens United decision, we have seen more and more special interest dark money poured into campaigns across the country. My We the People Amendment returns the power to the people by finally ending corporate constitutional rights, reversing Citizens United, and ensuring that our democracy is truly of the people, by the people, and for the people, not corporations, close quote. The We the People Amendment ends corporate constitutional rights after the Supreme Court's ruling in Citizens United. Following this 2010 decision, independent spending increased by more than 600% compared to the previous election cycle. This created an enormous imbalance in power in which the average American's ability to influence elected officials is dwarfed by large corporations. The ruling also enabled corporate personhood, granting the freedom of expression to corporations. If you have thoughts on whether money is free speech, you can contact your representative and share your opinion regarding the We the People Amendment, H.J.R. 48. This is Chris Moore with Make Them Hear You.
It's now time to check in with herbalist Brigitte Mars, who brings us her weekly episode of Naturally.
Greetings. Welcome to Naturally. This is Brigitte Mars. I'm a big advocate of apple cider vinegar. And if you check out my book, The Country Almanac of Home Remedies, you'll see that I recommend it probably 100 times in there. Well, there's many reasons why this is such a great remedy for so many things. First of all, we want to buy unpasteurized apple cider vinegar because it has the potential to be a living, healthy microbiome, good for our intestines and our immune system if it's unpasteurized. So brands that I look for are Bragg's, Eden Foods, but I think you can even find some generic ones that say unpasteurized. And I also learned that you can make your own apple cider vinegar. It's pretty easy. I learned to do this just using like the apple cores and the peels. And this is something I would do in the fall in apple season. Well, we know that apple cider vinegar is alkalinizing. And I know that seems peculiar because we tend to think of it as being acidic, but because it is acidic, it actually causes our bodies to get more alkaline. Okay, so that's good. And we also know that it's naturally high in vitamin C. And it's also very diuretic, meaning it's going to increase kidney function. And it has some antimicrobial properties. So things that I do with apple cider vinegar, if you get stung by a bee or you have a mosquito bite or you have chicken pox, you can make a little paste with baking soda and apple cider vinegar and rub it on there. It's also good for like cysts and boils, apple cider vinegar and baking soda, a little paste. Another remedy that I use over and over again is apple cider vinegar and honey stirred into a cup of hot water. And there's like 100 things you can do with this remedy. Let's say 2 teaspoons of honey and 2 teaspoons of apple cider vinegar stirred into hot water. Try it for a headache. Try it for a hangover. Try it for a cold. Try it for you think you're getting a bladder infection. Try it for the flu. Try it for food poisoning. I mean, you really can't go wrong with this. Try it before you go to the emergency room because this might just settle your stomach. And I've even found that it tastes good enough that kids will drink it. Apple cider vinegar. If you've gotten too much sun, add a cup to the bath. If you have itchy skin, a cup of apple cider vinegar in the bath. Now, for cleaning the house, I use white vinegar, but I don't ingest that. The only time I use white vinegar is if I'm wanting to make a floral vinegar like violets and I want to make a purple vinegar, but that's not what I'm going to be using on a daily basis. So you might want to think about having apple cider vinegar. It keeps through the winter And, you know, lemons aren't in season all the time. You can use a little apple cider vinegar as a substitute for lemon if you don't have any, to make your guacamole, to make your salad. And have a lot on hand because it's going to preserve well and it can get you through times of illness and do so many wonderful things for our body. Thanks for joining me, Brigitte Mars, on Naturally.
That's going to do it for today's Morning Magazine. I've been your host and producer, Shannon Young. Special thanks to Kira Zizzo, Ryan Bigham, Poor Jai Jung Kit, Alexis Kenyon, Chris Moore, and Brigitte Mars for their work on today's program. We still have some breakfast outside if you want to roll by 4700 Walnut Street on your bike, because it is Bike to Work Day. Pick up some breakfast before it's all gone. Stay tuned for the latest commentary from Jim Hightower, and we actually have a very quick Vox Pop to share with you on the other side of the headlines. From the BBC News.